Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here, and working with others is an excellent topic. So, I will start by saying, and nobody freak out or anything, come January 7th, I will be in Overeaters Anonymous for 55 years. I am only recovered since 2017, so I'm starting my ninth year, December 1st of 2017. So I'm starting my ninth year as of last week. And between January of 1971 and December of 2017, sometimes my body was at the right size, and sometimes, most of the time, it wasn't. And if it, when it wasn't, it was always going up or going down. It never stayed the same until 9 years, till 8 years ago and change. So, and I've spoken to the same sponsor 5 days a week for 40 years. She is my dear friend, but she couldn't help me. And, in the book it says, to stay sober, here are some of the methods we tried: taking a trip, not taking a trip, swearing off forever with and without a solemn oath, which is my favorite one because, the solemn oath part. And, I did try everything, but, if wishes were horses, beggars would ride. And I don't, nothing worked. And my life continued to, go career out of control. Now, a career is something for a significant part of your life where it offers a job that you do that offers the opportunity for advancement. But the second definition is to move swiftly in an uncontrolled direction. That was my eating career. It's a swiftly in an uncontrolled direction. I was careering around all the time, and I never got anywhere because I wasn't on a road and I wasn't riding a bike or driving a car. I don't know what I was doing, but I wasn't going anywhere. And my life, I mean, I live in a nice house. I live in a nice town. I have two beautiful children. They're both graduated from college. My husband loves me. I have everything that generally that I could want in my life, but I couldn't stop eating. And sometimes, like I said, sometimes I'd stop, and I never knew what to do. And another thing that I'll say flat out is that I'm highly agnostic. I'm not an atheist, but neither am I a believer. I think of myself as a ruby-throated hummingbird, which is the only hummingbird that's native to North America, hovering in between the two and hating both. Like, I'm not interested in either. And so I had a pretty steep hill to climb to get recovered. But the best thing that ever happened to me was that my life imploded completely. And, yeah, there's always a bottom beneath, below the one is an expression. But I just couldn't get there, and I had to be put there. And that came in the form of my daughter, my sweet girl. She started cutting and burning herself. And I was just howling with fear and pain and rage. And she was like obsessed with these things that I didn't think they were dumb, but I could tell, I could have told her and tried to tell her that it was temporary and that everything was going to be okay, that I would protect her, her dad would protect her, she was safe, and she didn't care what I thought. She just, her feelings were so big, she had to cut herself open to let them out. And it was just awful. And I was sitting in my car. It was just, I can't describe how bad it was. But one day I was sitting in my car and I was sobbing over my afternoon box of donuts as opposed to the morning one, And whatever it is that takes care of me was having coffee with the other ones and said, you know what? I think this one's had enough. I think I'm going to pluck her back from the gates of death and set her on the right path. And I picked up my phone and I called a friend that I've known for 50 years in the program. And she told me about a meeting that focused on the big book. And I was like, ugh, I'm not doing that. It sucks. It's a phone meeting and I'm not doing it. And, there was a lot of profanity in there, but the bottom line was, forget it. That's what I thought to myself. But all I said was, phone meeting. And my friend heard what I was thinking. So she responded to that. She said, no. She said, this one's different. I promise. They're on the doctor's opinion. You've got to dial in. I was like, ugh. All right, give me the website. And this is where she saved my life. She said, no, I'm going to give you the phone number. Get a piece of paper. I'll wait. So I had to dig through my sticky donut purse and find a sticky donut pen and a sticky donut piece of paper, and I wrote it on a sticky steering wheel in the middle of my steering wheel, so it wasn't nice and neat. It looked like somebody had written it while they were tripping on acid, and I threw it in my tote bag, and I forgot about it until I was getting ready for work. That was like, I don't know when it was, but there was a long period where I wasn't going to work, like a holiday weekend or something. Well, must have been, because on November 30th, which was right after Thanksgiving, I guess, I was cleaning out my tote bag, throwing my Tupperware in the sink, getting ready for the next day, and I found the piece of paper and I smoothed it out on my breakfast bar, and I was like, ugh, again. And I'll tell you some of the methods that I tried. Eat this, don't eat that. Eat that, don't eat this. Weigh and measure, don't weigh and measure. Eat sugar, don't eat sugar. All of them. And my favorite one was I would get a new sponsor, an additional sponsor from my friend. She's my sponsor, but she's my friend too. And the meaner, the better. The more controlling, the more uptight, the more, the meaner, the kind that would ditch you if you sneezed instead of coughed. And, I would try that, and that never worked. And people were willing to help me. And I, by the way, I had a very deep bench of support. My mother, when Bernice S. moved from California to Massachusetts in 1966, she put an ad in the paper for Overeaters Anonymous. My mother answered that ad. I was only 6 years old, and I joined OA myself in 1971 when I was 11. So I'll be 66 on my next birthday in February. So that's how come I have such, longevity. And my mother and all her dumb OA friends, they would have helped me, and they decided all their kids were compulsive overeaters, so they formed a young people's meeting when young people meant prepubescent instead of under 30. And so I went to that, and I had a lot of support, and my attitude was, get away from me and leave me alone. And sometimes I'd say it out loud. And I went on like that until I met my sponsor, and then I didn't tell her to get away from me. But I never, I've talked to her on the phone for 40 years, 40, 40, and she couldn't help me, even though she loves me and I love her. And so I dialed into this meeting, and I've not had to hurt myself with food since that day. And we read through the book, and I said, to myself, she's going to kick me out. She went to 12 years of Catholic school. She's like totally into it, into the God thing. And I just couldn't make myself do it. And I tried hard, and I tried for a long time, and I tried consistently. And I pretended, I mean, the four terrible horsemen are not terror, bewilderment, frustration, and despair. It's fake it till you make it, act as if, borrow mine, and use the group. Those things did nothing for me. And finally, I said, I choked out my secret in my bedroom upstairs, and the door closed. We live in a Victorian. Our doors are made of solid wood. They're like soundproof booths. And I'm whispering, like, I don't think this is going to make it for me. This is going to do it for me. I'm not going to get it. And she said, why not? I said, because, and I'm closing my eyes in my room because I don't think I believe in God. And she said, don't worry about it. You haven't had a spiritual awakening. And it's not like I thought that I had had a spiritual awakening or hadn't. I thought I was awake. Just that it wasn't working very well, or just that it didn't, live up to its expectations. And so we get through the steps. I mean, this is supposed to be about working with others, so I'll get to the point. She told me that I had to make two phone calls a day. And the old Nancy P called the doctors, the lawyers, and the teachers, the ones that were in surgery, in court, or in class, the people that I knew wouldn't be home or hoped wouldn't be home. And, the new Nancy P, and then I'd hang up the phone if I ever called anybody, but I convinced myself that I did. And I'd think, oh, I didn't get anybody, but I'll try better, tomorrow. And of course, it never worked because I never tried better, never tried harder, and I never called people that were home. So when I wanted to get better, I did what she said. I called people till I got people. And in my mind, I thought to myself, I have nothing to offer. What am I going to do? And I said to myself, I did what I call kick myself in the brain. And I said, solve this problem right now, like no jerking around. And, it was, I thought, well, I can say what I mean. And anybody that ever gets a phone call from me, it's always the same. Hi, is this whoever it is? Hi, it's Nancy P calling from wherever I got their number. Just making outreach calls. Do you have a few minutes? And they usually say yes. And I say, great, tell me about yourself. Are you new to away or whatever the meeting is, or neither or both, or tell me about yourself. And then they talk, and then I talk, and then they talk, and then, like 5, 10, 20 minutes later, we get off the phone. Sometimes they don't have time. I say, no problem, save my number, call me anytime for any reason. Click. And that counts as an outreach call. What doesn't count as an outreach call is texts, callbacks, or voicemails. Those don't count. And the reason that I have to be so careful about that is because if I count those things, then it's like eating food. I'm going to say, well, I thought about making a call, or I know what a phone is, or I heard a phone ring somewhere. That counts, like that's how we eat, right? So I'm very OCD about that. And today, my recovery is dependent on two things. First, surrender, surrender, surrender. And second, what I call fellowshipping. And fellowshipping includes making outreach calls, and it includes sponsoring, and it includes taking calls from other people. If I can, I pick up the phone. I mean, there's very few instances where I can't talk, or won't, or feel that it's inappropriate. Very few, maybe three or four. Other than that, unless I'm sleeping, working, or actively with my family, I pick up the phone. I've always got my headset on. I mean, I'm going out after this, so I did my hair and everything, so no headset. But I have it on all the time. I'm plugged in all the time. I'm talking on the phone. I whatever, and I make a lot of calls. I make a lot of calls. And when we finish the steps, my sponsor said, all right, tomorrow I want to hear you saying that you're available to sponsor. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. I have a way better idea. And she said, what's that? I said, I think we should do it again like a cycle. She laughed at me, which I didn't even know she could do. And she said, no, that's a terrible idea for me and for you. And the next day, somebody called me up and said, hi, my name is whoever it was. So and so told me that you were available to sponsor. And I was like, well, I guess I am. And that's how I started sponsoring. And in the beginning, all I could do was read the notes that I had written in this very book, which I had rebound in leather, with my initials, my name down here. And because it's so old, I got this very book from my parents as a gift, June 23rd, 1979. And so I used the same big book that I ever have, and that saved me. And today, I call it fellowshipping. My sponsoring at first was only reading my notes, but gradually, my book says the same as everybody else's book. It's the same. The words are exactly the same, but the message has become my own, and it's changed over the past, 8 years because I continue to do what the steps say. And specifically, my next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. That's what it says in the 10th step. And I just got a call today from somebody who was, I don't know, she was like all twisted up. And I just listened to her talk, and finally I said, well, I can't hear anything in your dialogue that tells me that you're crazy or stupid. So I think you need to put on your big girl pants and go help somebody else. That's what I think, because she did want to know what I thought, or else I wouldn't have told her. And my agnosticism, just to let anybody who's having doubts about their own, point of view in that area, is the thing that shot me right into the center mass of my recovery. Because when I finally woke up, I couldn't believe it. I mean, I could not believe it. And trust me, I have a robust imagination. I couldn't imagine it. I couldn't believe it. I did not know when I called that woman. I listened to the meeting for a couple of days, and I wrote down some names of sponsors, and maybe her, but I, whatever, they didn't like appeal to me. But this woman that I actually asked to be my sponsor, she'd never said her name out loud. And I knew why, because she had a lot of sponsees and was very busy. But I approached her anyways, and she said she would. She said, I have Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday nights at 9:30 p.m. And I said, done. She could have said, I have Sunday, Tuesday, and Thursday nights at 2:30 in the morning, and I would have said the same thing. I did every single thing she told me to do immediately and as hard as I could. And the onus of responsibility was not large. It was, just do what I say. She didn't even say that. I mean, she didn't even care that much about me. I called her up once and I said, I don't know what to do about Clementines. They're so little. She said, either weigh them or don't eat them. And she hung up on me. And that's, I lost a job. And I called her up and I said, I lost my job. And she said, "What happened?" And I told her. And instead of saying, "Oh, poor Nancy, one door opens, another one closes, or one door closes, another one opens, you'll be fine," she goes, "Who do you think you are? Who the fuck do you think you are?" She said that to me. Those words. She said, "What do you think you're doing? Blah, 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 blah." And you know what? She was right, and I was wrong. So I went away with my tail between my legs. I still made all my phone calls, and I got another job. It took a while because I wanted a specific job and a specific salary. And I got a job, and they fired me after 6 weeks. I called her up and I said, "I lost my job." And she said, "What happened?" I said, "I did everything you said. I've shut the fuck up. I did what I was told. I mean, I didn't not do what I was told, but I did it my way. Then I did it their way, and they still booted me." And I said, "So, I did everything you said." And she said, "How many people are you working with?" And I said, "Four." And she said, "Good." And she hung up on me. And like, 'cause it doesn't matter what goes on in my life today. I learned that from her. And, when I sponsor people, I have said this out loud when necessary. I don't care if you recover. I take neither credit nor responsibility. You care. I don't care what you eat. What you eat and if you recover does not affect me. It affects you. I got a store. It's called Nancy P's Experience, Strength and Hope. Guess what's for sale in it? Nancy P's Experience, Strength and Hope. Like, I'm not interested in any, it's not a democracy. And I put this in writing, by the way. Anybody that I work with gets a little list of what they have to do. And at the very end, it says, "I expect you to be ready, sitting quietly, undistracted, with your book ready to work." Unbelievably, I actually had to add, "And please don't be driving when you do this," because somebody called me up and I said to wanted me to sponsor them. I said, "Okay, do you have your book?" She goes, "No, I'm driving." I said, "Okay, get home. Please don't be driving." And she dumped me. I don't care. When someone dumps me, see, I got these like tape flags in here, these tape flags. When somebody dumps me, I take out the tape flag and I throw it away and I forget who it said because I don't care. I mean, I do care. I don't want people to be suffering from compulsive overeating. Trust me, I know what that's like. I put a lot of time into it. But today I don't suffer from it because my only job is to sell my experience, strength, and hope. And I've never once called anybody up and said, "Sounds like you need a new sponsor. How about me?" They come to me, and therefore they got to play by my rules. And if they don't want to, no problem at all. I get fired all the time. And I always say the same thing, that sometimes they just don't call me, which is fine. Sometimes they call me, sometimes they text me. And whether they call me or text me, I say the same thing. No problem at all. Best of luck. Please feel free to call me anytime for any reason. And I mean it. Because the whole point of this, of my recovery, is contingent upon working with other people specifically, which is why I'm so,
3 minutes,
I
Nancy.
get you. I see that. I actually see this huge pink sign in there. So I'm glad. My recovery is contingent, meaning it is completely dependent. Like, here's something that's contingent on something else. This, you take this away, and this thing's floating out in the middle of nowhere. My recovery, and I would like to say to anybody who doubts me, my life is filled with joy and light. Every single breath I've ever taken since December 1st of 2017 has been one of joy and light, including when my daughter was hacking herself up with a razor blade and burning herself to a crisp. You know why? Because even though it was hard, it was worse when I was eating. And there's nothing quite like putting bacitracin ointment on your own child's self-inflicted wounds to let you know what powerlessness means. And I have never had to hurt myself with food since that day, only because I was ready. And one of my friends told me, "You rave about this sponsor, but anybody could have sponsored you." And it's probably true, but I'm really glad that it was her, because my inner sort of, jerk came out, like my implacable know who I am and know who I'm not person came out. Like, that's why I say to people, eat or don't eat, do it or don't do it. It doesn't matter to me because it doesn't affect me. It affects you. But if you want what I have, then do what I say. I don't tell them to do anything like hand over your retirement account or write me a check. I don't ever say that. I say to, be kind to other people. Like, no religion ever says murder, rape, and pillage. They all say, come with us, do what we do, and we'll keep you safe. And if, for my sponsees, all I have is my own story. I'm not distracted by peripheral things when I'm working with somebody. When I'm at work, I work. I don't schmooze. I don't talk about, I don't know, anything really, except the book. And that has stood me in good stead. I feel serene. My mind is at rest. In my, I'll give you my five benchmarks in the last few seconds, which are: I'm happy, joyous, and free. I don't hurt myself with food under any circumstances. I'm actually going to a party after I get off the phone, after I get off this meeting. I've already eaten, brushed, and flossed my teeth, so I'm not going to eat there at all. I don't do that. I don't eat at other people's houses. So I'm happy, joyous, and free. I don't hurt myself with food under any circumstances. I help other people. I comprehend the word serenity, and I know peace. And if I'm missing anything, let me know. But so far, my relationship with other people and my sponsoring and everything has made my life, what I get in my life has become what I want in my life, has become what I need in my life. And I don't have any regrets at all. And with that, I'll pass.